Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello and welcome to this episode number 131 of the Free Cities Podcast. Brought to you, as always, by Veritas Village, building off-grid, energy self-sufficient luxury homes in their freedom-oriented developments. Their latest projects in Panama, you know this already, it's being built and you can own a property there. Perfect climate for growing your own food. Every house comes with its own solar and or solar wind system included to keep you energy self-sufficient. Please get in touch with them via this link, www.ecovillages.life/podcast, or jump into the show notes for everything you need to know. Veritas Village. Give them a look if you're looking for a plan B or even a plan A in a beautiful location. Today's episode specifically has come about also thanks to another of our kind sponsors, Trey Franzoy. Many thanks, Trey, for inviting us over to the US and introducing us to so many great people at the leadership program of the Rockies. One such person who I met through Trey is today's guest, Isabella Patriota. Isabella is the Director of Development at Lola. That's a name that comes up a lot in my life. I meet a lot of Lola people at a lot of conferences I attend. Lola is the Ladies of Liberty Alliance. It's a worldwide organization that recruits, trains, and promotes activists, advocates, and leaders for the advancement of liberty, peace, and a freer society. Naturally, in today's conversation, we talk about freedom and women's issues in particular. I also talk about men's issues, of course. After all, I'm a bloke. Anyway, let's see how the AI digested our discussion. Isabella shares her unique background as a Brazilian woman navigating the complexities of politics and economic freedom. The dialogue delves into the current political climate in Brazil, highlighting the influence of US politics on Latin America. Isabella provides insights into the economic challenges Brazil faces, including inflation and the impact of government policies on individual freedoms. As a passionate advocate for women's rights, Isabella discusses the importance of empowering women to make their own choices, emphasizing the need for a supportive community rather than relying on government intervention. We also touch on the evolving roles of men and women in society, the implications of technology on relationships, and the significance of personal responsibility in achieving happiness. Ride on, ride on. I do enjoy those kind of discussions, by the way. The wonderful feminist, whose name I could not remember for the majority of this conversation, is Camille Paglia. That's Camille spelt Paglia, if you want to look her up. I get it towards the end of the conversation, but would highly recommend you check her out online before or after you listen to this conversation. She's a wonderful orator and promoter of a very sane version of feminism that I, for one, certainly appreciate. Anyway, I still stand by my assertion that you may hear at the end of this conversation that we are all living through one of the most significant periods in human history, as we are all forced to grapple with free and abundant information like never before. This period in history requires us to take extreme responsibility for what we choose to believe and think, and where critical thinking and self-reflection should be your new superpowers. Certainly, if you have children, you should be teaching that to them. Very brief SBR, Strategic Bitcoin Reserve, and Nostr this week. Turns out the digital nomads from last week haven't quite discovered Nostr yet. Anyway, Hutch says, quote, just found your podcast, going to spend the next 200 hours engulfing it all. sounds intense. Myself, I've only just survived the process mentally, and I spread it out over 2 years. So good luck, soldier. Anyway, mustn't forget this week to plug the Free Cities Online Summit. It starts next week on Monday, the 26th of May. And the reason I know that's because that's also my birthday, the 26th of May. I won't tell you how old I am. I think you can see it on Wikipedia if you really care. Anyway, it's on all week, hosted by our CEO, Peter Young. And it really does have an amazing speaker lineup this year. Titus Gable, of course, Tom Woods, Patrick Freeman, Joe Quirk, Michael Minnelli. You may not know him. He's a former Lord Mayor of London. And from the Honduras story, Massimo Mazzoni and Alex Ugorji from Ciudad Morazan. It's going to be a good one. In fact, the only other place you'll ever see this caliber of Free Cities folk all in one place is actually our other conference, our IRL in real life conference in Prague, coming up later on this year. That's one you also don't want to miss. Both of those conferences, if you want to find out more. The Prague conference, which is the one that where you get to meet everyone in real life, that's freecitiesconference.com. And the online summit, which starts next week, is freecitiessummit.org. Right, time to jump into the conversation. Find your easy chair. You know the drill. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Isabella Patriota. Maybe let's start with your a bit of a kind of history lesson in you, because you're obviously an American, but you're obviously your family doesn't come from America. Yeah. So there's an interesting story there, I'm sure. What is it?
Well, I've always wanted to move to the U.S. I came here for the first time when I was 15 to go to Disney World. As all Latins, this is the dream to turn 15 and to visit Disney World. So I did that and then I was impressed. And then I came to the U.S. another time because I got a scholarship to attend a conference. So I really thought to myself that I wanted to move. And in 2019, I applied to the internship with the Cato Institute. So I was a research intern with them, researching about Latin America issues. So I was supporting them with research on the new president of Brazil, that former president Jair Bolsonaro.
What I was going to say was, as a Brazilian, how did you even know what the Cato Institute was? Like, did you have a father or mother that brought you up with free market ideas and stuff like that?
I mean, no, not at all.
How do you get into that stuff in Brazil then? I mean, what's Bolsonaro? Is that how I say it?
Bolsonaro.
How did he lean? Left, right, centrist?
He's right wing.
A right winger.
Milei is. And Trump. He was, before Milei in 2019, he was considered a Trump of the tropics.
Is that right? What happened to him? Like, my Brazil politics and history is terrible.
Okay.
Who's in power now in Brazil?
Lula. Far left.
Far left. So they went, was that a response to Bolsonaro?
Yes, it was. It was. But we can get one question and then we can go from there. Which one do you prefer? Because you asked about the family, how I got here
as
well.
Yeah,
You prefer Bolsonaro?
My brain is going. Now, we can come back to that. But okay. I'm trying to understand the whole thing. And like I say, Brazil is one of those places for me where I've been there a few times, but I don't know much about it.
Okay.
So I'd like you to set the scene there. So you currently you've got a left-wing government.
Yeah.
Far left-wing government.
Far,
like, far, 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 far left-wing. Far. Mm-hmm. Right. And you came from a sort of Milei type character. Yeah. Well, that's a shame.
I know.
Like, what happened there then? Because a lot of people look at Milei and think that he's going to, well, I mean, he appears to be turning Argentina around, certainly in an economic sense. So what happened to Bolsonaro then?
Well, Brazil is very much influenced by whatever happens here in the U.S. As just like the rest of Latin America, we're very influenced by the U.S. And what happened was our election was in 2022, 2 years after the election here in 2020. So when Trump was elected in 2016, immediately after we elected Bolsonaro as well in 2019. And then they elected Biden here. Why they changed it to? It's a permanent question. How they went from Trump to Biden is also a permanent question. But it was similar because we also went from Bolsonaro to Lula. In Brazil, at least, because the U.S. influences the geopolitics in Latin America a lot. So we do believe that this is going to be the case again. We're going to go back to the right wing in the upcoming elections that's going to take place next year. But what was in the minds and hearts of Brazilians in 2022 was the way that the pandemic was handled. And Bolsonaro did precisely the same that Trump did. He has never done a national lockdown. He didn't do it. So the governors did, just like in the U.S. Some governors were more open, some were more strict. So that was the same case. But the fact that Bolsonaro is as outspoken as Trump is in a variety of themes like gays, blacks, immigrants. So this is what we believe led to the election of Lula. They used a lot of things that he was saying against him. And of course, the way that he managed the pandemic. And also because in Brazil, the culture is huge on the vaccines. So the fact that Bolsonaro was not openly defending and supporting a national vaccination program, it was also used against him, which was very similar to what Trump faced here. And because Bolsonaro is a huge fan of Trump, he has also said that he loved him once to Trump himself. And then Trump didn't say, I love you back. So it's very funny.
So are you saying that Bolsonaro is going to go up in the next election like Trump did and try and win?
It is possible. But just like in the U.S., Bolsonaro is facing lots of charges. Right now, he's unelectable in Brazil, legally speaking. And of course, our system is different than America's. Because here in Colorado, Trump was, he couldn't be elected. He was considered unelectable here as well for a little while. I don't know how they changed this. But currently, Bolsonaro is unelectable, legally speaking. Because we also had our January 6th, which was in Brazil on January 8th. Of 2023, which was precisely the same thing. And lots of these people are still in jail since 2023. And some of them are in a very bad situation. So there are a lot of advocates to remove these people from jail. Right now, our patriots from Brazil that did. And they really went to our capital as well. They invaded the Supreme Court. They invaded lots of public buildings in Brasilia, the capital of Brazil. So whatever is happening here influences and says what is going to happen there.
What's the economic situation in Brazil at the moment? Inflation and just the general economy, etc.
Well, Brazil is the ninth economy of the world, but it is, if we get in rough numbers, right? If we get to the population, it's a poor country. It's just because we have a huge population and we are very productive in many different areas. So we do have a lot of inflation, but it is different when we're talking about Latin America. Latin American countries, they're used to have inflation. So here, when it hits 7% a year, everybody gets desperate. But usually Brazil has, it is around 20% a year. And yes, high interest levels, interest rates. And this is how it goes. Economically speaking, it is a stable country. We weren't like Argentina was before Milei. We were not. So Brazilians would go to Argentina and feel very wealthy because our currency was doing way better than theirs. But just as a matter of comparison, when Milei got into power, our currency was I know that $2 was 1 to 1,000, so divided by 5. So it was 1 to 200. Now it has decreased a lot. I would need to check how much it is right now. However, last year our currency devalued much more than the Argentina pesos, the Argentinian pesos, and we were performing as good as countries like Tanzania, as Egypt. Our currency was performing as good as these countries.
That's interesting. Did when did you leave? How old were you when you left for the US?
How old? I was 27.
Right.
I'm 33 right now.
You're 33.
Yeah.
So you lived under 20% inflation, and it was normal.
Yes.
And what does that mean for you in daily life? Like, if you're getting a wage from someone, do you have to keep asking for a pay rise or something?
This is a good question, because in Brazil, like, people don't really we don't have that that culture of asking for a raise, because they are much more interested in keeping their jobs. So I would need to check how much was the, because for instance the inflation in Argentina was 100%.
I know, yeah.
It was 100%. So 20% is actually nothing.
Well, it is. I mean, in 5 years, you've like, if you're losing 20% of your purchasing power a year, so after 1 year you've 80%. After another, you're what, 60 something? You know, before, like, within 3 or 4 years, you've lost half of your purchasing power. That means your wages have halved.
I know.
I just wonder what it's like. I know, you know, I've never lived in that scenario. I'm interested to know what you have to do to sort of combat it if you're just a normal person on a wage. If you're running your own business, you can put your prices up. You can, you know, obviously no one wants to do that, but that is, but if you're getting, you know, I don't know, $50,000 a year pay, and in 3 years' time, you only can only buy half as much stuff with that money. That's like getting a 50% pay cut. So you need to ask for a 50% pay rise. But I don't know.
Brazil is a poor country. It is the third world. So people are used to be poor, which is a bad way of saying it. But just a matter of comparison. When I moved to the US in January 2019, the dollar was a little below four. It was, the rate was $1 to 380 something reais, 3.88 reais. Now, it's $1 to $6, so it doubled, and then in December it was 6.3, so it over doubled a little. Like, yes, it doubled. So Brazilians just reduce their the consumer power just reduces, and then people just work more and consume less,
and then don't go to Disney.
They don't.
Half as many people.
I know, which is funny, you know, because this is used as a joke in Brazil. A former minister even mentioned, the minister of Bolsonaro, because he was mentioning how the monetary policy was not doing good because they were so fake. And then he did a joke that wasn't very good. And it reflects how much he was just like Trump, because he said in Brazil back then, even the cleaning ladies, they are able to afford to go to Disneyland from Brazil. Something's off in this math. If our cleaning ladies that don't make that much money, they're able to afford to go to Disney World, something's off. And so he did lots of monetary changes in the country to make it more stable. But of course, once you're doing, the trade-off is always that you're going to impact the poor people a lot, just like Milei did. And he said, before it gets better, it's going to worse a lot. So it's going to be painful. Like, the movement of growing, it's going to be painful until you stabilize the country.
Before we get onto your America story again, mm-hmm. Let's keep talking about Latin America. Because you seem to know quite a bit about it. what do you think about El Salvador, for example? Do you know much about what's going on there?
Yes, I follow what is going on there. I'm not going to say that I know a lot of details about it. I just know that what Bukele, the president, did with the Bitcoin reform, or accepting Bitcoin openly, was good for the economy. However, it is controversial what he's doing when it comes to public security. And I'm still waiting for it, because now people say that they like to go to El Salvador. But if it is at the cost of putting innocent people in jail just to make sure that you put everybody, including the bad guys. I don't know if it's a good idea. Public criminals and this debate is a very tough debate that I don't really understand a lot. I just know that what he's doing right now is controversial. And
is it? I don't think it's controversial in El Salvador at all. I mean, it's almost certain that some innocent people are currently in jail. That would be very, it would be difficult for not, because there are 50 or 60,000 people put in jail, I think. But I mean, I've been there a few times recently, and people are very appreciative of the freedom they now feel walking around the capital city or wherever they are. I'm a bit like you. I don't know what the correct thing to do is, because I can fully see that what's happened has been super productive. And I've met a few people here, actually, former El Salvadorians who live in America, and they're going back. They like the idea that they can go back and start a business in their home country. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. What about other parts of Latin America? It seems that Latin America is always, what in Europe, all we hear about is there's communists everywhere destroying countries. That's the most common thing you hear. And all of a sudden, we seem to be having this moment when characters are appearing who are trying to reform, are trying to sort of bring libertarian ideas, more freedom, free market ideas into Latin America. Do you think that's true? Is that a real thing, or is that just a few isolated cases that I know about?
You know? No, it is true, unfortunately. And that's why during the mid of the last century, when we had the Cold War, we even had this fight over Latin America. So we do have, that's why we have Cuba, that's why we have Nicaragua, and that's why we have Venezuela right now. And however, Brazil, when we had our dictatorship was funded by the US government. Like, it's open now, like they opened the papers and everything. So it was a right-wing dictatorship in Brazil that ended in the mid of the 80s. And but it was very bad because economically speaking, they were very interventionist and very Keynesian. So it didn't do any good, economically speaking. However, it was very safe in Brazil because they were putting everybody in jail. So Brazil back then, if you go back, it was safe, no criminals in the streets. However, it was going so bad economically that the country went bankrupt. So we needed to restart all over again. And if the population is poor, there is a limit that you can reach of putting people in jail. After that, you don't have spaces to put them anymore. What are you going to do with them? And the country is not really producing. So it is true. This is unfortunate. But I think we are changing. For instance, even in Brazil, the libertarian movement there is growing a lot. I'm part of the Ladies of Liberty Alliance there. It's one of our most impactful chapters. We elect some of our girls, of course, not to the federal. We elected only one in the federal level, but in the local level, we are electing a lot of women, and we're working in changing their hearts and minds. We do see a couple countries that are doing good. It's just because the bad ones, of course, they outperform because it is so bad what they're doing that you can't really close your eyes, just like in Venezuela with Maduro. And by the way, Lula is close friends with Maduro, and also with the dictator of Nicaragua, and also with the dictator of Cuba. They were part of the same movement called Foro de São Paulo. So that's why it's sad what is going on in Brazil. But we're hopeful. Elections are next year. Lula is doing very bad economically right now. I don't think he is going to be reelected, for instance.
But do you think that Latin America is having a bit of a renaissance at the moment? Or do you think that's potentially coming, a lot of change everywhere? Or do you think this is just El Salvador and maybe Argentina and that's it? You know?
No, I think we're going to experience a change. Even, for instance, we had that in Colombia before. We had that in Chile before. Presidents that were more right-leaning. But then what happens in the U.S. influences a lot of the region. So right now that we have Trump, and then they know in these countries that having a president that's not aligned with the one that's running the world, it is not good domestically. So I do believe, and I do see Brazil aligning to Trump next year. I don't know if Bolsonaro is going to be running for the reason that I said earlier, but let's see.
Okay. Right, that's the Central America. That's the Latin America overview. Right, back to you and the United States then. So you came here in 2019 and worked at the Cato Institute. That's an interesting way to come into the States. Did you know much about these principles that the Cato Institute, spread, the kind of ideas that they espouse? Did you know before you came?
Yes, when I came, first time I came was to Disney World. The second time was because I got a scholarship from them to go to California. It was a program called by them, the Cato University. It took only 1 week. So I went to California sponsored by them.
Before you go on, how did you know about the Cato Institute in Brazil? Like who got you interested in these kind of ideas and stuff?
As we were talking about my parents earlier, my parents are not political. I'm from a very Catholic family, very, very religious. So I studied in Catholic schools my entire life. So it was how I learned English. But how I learned about the Cato Institute was in college, because right after high school, I went to college, I studied law. And then in law school in Brazil, it's just like here. Everybody's pretty much liberal, progressive. I didn't understand anything I didn't know what they were talking about. I didn't really. I hadn't been exposed to any political philosophy at all. So I didn't know what I was doing there. And then I got into a scholarship from the university, paid by the government, to kind of incentivize the students to be the lawyers of our state-owned company in oil, Petrobras. Similar to what they have in Venezuela. They wanted us to work for them, so they were training us. And I applied for that one just because they were the best salary, like the best stipend. Yeah. And so I applied, and then I needed to do my thesis on it, and everything needed to be on it. And then I was just following. I was going with the flow and doing, I was going to do my thesis on it and blah, blah, blah. Until they had the biggest scandal of corruption in Brazil involving that same state-owned company that was Petrobras. It was huge, billions that they were sending abroad, you know, to offshores and this kind of thing. And then that interested me a lot because I was paid by them. And then I wanted to know what was going on. And then the only classic liberal professor in the school, I remember that he was rejected. He was in an ostracism in the school, and then nobody was like would talk to him. But he was, since from the beginning, you know, he was that kind of nonchalant. I don't care if you don't like me. I'm here. I'm going to teach my classes. And he was the professor of economic law. And then I applied for his course. And then he said, you need to read these books. And then the books are from Brazilian economists. I don't know if you would know, but I would say that their names, because they changed my life, because I read them. And then Fabio Giambiaggi and Alexandre Schwarzman, their names, these economists that this professor introduced me to. And then I read, that was a mind-blowing moment in my life. And I read,
what kind of economics was it then?
They were talking about Brazilian reforms, economic reforms that Brazil would need to do in order to grow, and specifically talking about the oil field. That was the one that I was studying, because we have a lot of oil, and we had found the largest field of oil recently in the last decades. So we were hopeful that we were going to be producing and be important in this field internationally, but we were never, because of this regulation. And then I changed my mind. So because I was part of that scholarship, that research group, my thesis was supposed to be about, and then I wrote my thesis proposing changing the regulation and going to a more open market design. And then I almost got reproved by my original mentor.
Sorry, you almost got what?
He almost didn't approve my thesis.
Oh, right.
I was gonna...
The classically liberal guy.
That was just a professor. My mentor was part of the program.
Right.
So he was also funded by the government. He was also funded by the state-owned company. And then he didn't like the other professor. The other professor was the one that inspired me. Until nowadays, we're very close. And then he helped me to apply to another university so I could leave my hometown, because it was in my hometown. And then I moved to Brasilia, where I studied with different professors. And then in Brasilia, it was when I learned about the Cato Institute, because more people had more access to other think tanks. And I was looking for opportunities to go abroad. And then, so a friend of mine in Brasilia, when I left, he recommended the Cato Institute programs. And so I applied for the program. So,
wow. So it was quite fortunate. Not according to the way you've described it, not many people, students especially, study any kind of economics, what I would call Austrian economics or free market economics now.
No, only this one professor in my hometown. And I'm very thankful to him until nowadays. And like, if it wasn't for him, I would still be a progressive. Not that I was, it's just because I didn't know anything about anything.
Well, there's a theory, isn't there, that you're progressive until you find out something else.
Yes, exactly.
Sounds like that's what you did. What about, okay, so you came to the States and Cato Institute, that must have been an interesting place to work.
Mm-hmm, it was. It was. Everybody there was so, it's impressive how smart they are. Sometimes, you know, and coming from Brazil, my second university was very good, where I did my master's in Brasilia. It was very, very, it was different, because when you are in the capital, you see that there are a diversity of thought there. In my hometown, it was a very left-leaning school. But in Brasilia, at least, I was exposed to different philosophies. So,
and where does Lola come into this? Not Lola, the president, Ladies of Liberty Alliance. That's mm-hmm. right.
Yes.
Where does that come into the story?
When I moved to Brasilia, I was looking for a group in which I would be comfortable with my new ideas that I had just learned. Because in Natal, my hometown, I would be. My friends would all be left-leaning, and I wanted to, and they are still my friends. We're still friends. I didn't dump them, but I was looking for a group that I would feel comfortable, and then I wouldn't need to be hiding what I believed, and I would, and then it was when I found Lola. Lola is in over 50 countries right now, but I was looking for a group of women that. And it's funny, because I was just searching women that are, because in Brazil, like in my hometown, they were all Marxist feminists. And then I was looking for liberal, classic liberal feminists. It's just to have a group of friends, like a sorority. And then I found Lola in Brasilia. So I joined Lola in Brasilia, and then in 2018. And then also in 2019, when I moved to DC in January to be part of the Cato Institute, because I was already part of Lola as one of their members, I went to their leadership training in DC in October. And then it was when I met all of the other girls, I met the president, and I met all of the rest of the staff. And then nowadays I work for them.
Is it a US organization?
Yes.
Yeah, it started in the US. I know there's chapters in Europe.
Yes.
Because I see them around at different conferences.
Nice.
Like, but so what is Lola then? What kind of, what happens at Lola?
Okay. Lola is the Ladies of Liberty Alliance. The president of Lola and founder Nina Whitfield worked for Ron Paul in his campaign. So she was campaigning for him in 2008. And she realized that not many women would vote for him. And she had that...
Wait a minute, why?
Exactly, why? She had that barrier. She realized that she had that... She couldn't really communicate to women to vote for him. And then after the elections, she worked for Rand Paul, the son, in the Senate. And then she decided to create a movement from women to women to change women's ideas on the government and how politics should work. Because she thought that the way that a man were expressing the ideas to women was not really working. it's bad or good, we don't know, but it wasn't working. It wasn't convincing women to be part of our side.
Stop there, because I want to know. I want to know why that is. Why? What is it about women that means that men were influenced by those ideas, but women weren't?
I believe, and this is a personal answer that I'm gonna give now. For instance, only women get pregnant, right? We know that. We can start from that.
Well, that's debatable. Yeah. Let's agree on that then.
Let's have that same starting point. Only women get pregnant. And with pregnancy, there are things that only women face. And they influence their careers. It influences their future. It influences a lot of things. And then the way that you're going to say to a woman that got pregnant, let's say, without even a boyfriend, and we need to leave her job, how do you communicate it to her in a way other than, oh my God, you're so stupid, or oh my God, you are now gonna pay for your mistakes that you've done, or like, oh yeah. And the left communicates it very well. They're able to communicate with them, you know what, we're gonna ask the government to pay for paid parent leaving, or to have you for 2 years not working and receiving money from the government. This is the easy answer. And this is so easy to communicate, you know? And then we talk about it all the time. How are we going to communicate that this is actually not good to women in general? Not even to her, you know? So this is one of the things. When women are asking for regulations for paid parent leaving or for children support or regular caregiver situation, like when your parents are old, we know that women are the one taking care of them. So how do we communicate that actually getting the government involved, paying for everything, or having a system that the government's going to be giving you everything is not necessarily the right answer?
Got a quick question before you go on. What was Ron Paul saying about things like that then? At the time?
Well, Ron Paul is very, he's a real huge, well, I know that's going to be controversial. He's a politician. So the way that people see him is going to vary. But Nina, I'm going to talk on her behalf right now. But she really admires him a lot because he has an economic view that free markets is going to be the one that's going to save everybody's lives. Of course, he can have more conservative views on many different topics because he's from the Republican Party. Of course he is. And he's a politician at the end of the day. He runs on votes. And this is what he cares about. So, but to Nina, the economic aspect was very important because, and also at the end of the day, if you have money, nothing really stops you from doing whatever you want. And we're going to talk about everything here, like all of the social part, even if, gay marriage was not allowed, but you're gay and then you have money, you will find a way of having your partner with your have your partner with the support that you want him to have, or to put all of your will under his name. You know, I know it's going to be harder, but if you have money, you can fix everything else in your life.
Okay, then I've got a question then, because going back to your pregnancy thing.
Okay.
It's the one time in a woman's life when they, if given the choice, it's very difficult for them to earn money.
Yeah.
So what is the solution to that problem then? If you believe that Social Security is a bad idea, as in free money mm-hmm. is not the way, what do you think the way is then?
Well, I really wish I had the very right answer for that. I know that whatever, and if my answer is the right one, I will apply for the Nobel Laureate program, and for sure I'm gonna win. But I will say what we believe. Okay, we believe that civil society is the one to help in those cases. As I said, I come from a very Catholic family. Catholics, they do have a way of support their community, and the problem is when you're taking money from someone else to support your mistakes. It is like, and people that have done everything right and they don't necessarily want to get involved with your problems, and then they need to pay for it, we don't think it's right. However, there are, and we're in the U.S. right now, right? The most philanthropic country in the world and in human history. There is no other country. Like, the drop to the second place is so clear. And so in the U.S., there are nonprofits that work to help people in these conditions. And they run, they operate in private money. And they are much more effective and transparent than the government will ever be. And also because they run on people's, how can I say that? They are willing to help these people so they are happy. So if you do something wrong, if you don't manage that money very well, I mean, they understand this is part of the problem. Not everybody's going to run your money as you would, but they know that some people are willing to help these people and to run business for that, you know? So I believe in civil society, and I believe in people, in charity. We believe in charity. And we believe in telling people that they need to own their mistakes. They need to own what they're doing wrong. And of course, a woman getting pregnant is always going to be the worst topic when it comes to this economic part. But of course, when you're not talking about the one that got pregnant from a one-night stand or the boyfriend that they are not really in a relationship. But let's talk about the professional woman that has a great career, has a great job, right? She's in a long relationship with her husband, and then she gets pregnant. These women, they can negotiate with their employers. This is something that happens. Even in this country, big corporations, they do give paid parent leaving, not necessarily because of any regulation, and sometimes even beyond what the regulation says, because they know that that employee is valuable to them. And women, because they know that once they have a job, it's so important. And also because many times if they are the breadwinner of the family, they don't want to lose that job. And then they miss... But this data, it's from Brazil, so I don't want to use it. But they miss work days less than men because they know that they don't want to have their reputation. And also because they are less likely to get different jobs. Men, it's very easy for men to adapt and get new jobs, you know? So there is an entire debate about it that we can talk about it if you want as well, team. But women are more likely to keep that job.
No, I'm very interested in it because I think it's a tricky one.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing and what we see now that's happened in the last sort of 50 years is that women have come into the workforce, the paid workforce, in a way that's unprecedented probably. And it's a difficult situation because, for example, myself as a man, I can pursue the same career my whole life, and having a family doesn't matter to me. I don't have to stop anything. In fact, if anything, when a family comes, I need to work harder. But as a woman, you have a choice to either be a mother or have someone else be a mother for you and pay them, which is a funny situation to be in because I'm not a woman, so I don't know this, but I'm a dad and I know that there's nothing better in the world than being a dad. So I'm going to go ahead and say there's probably nothing in the world better than being a mum as well. The difference for me is I can keep my job and be a dad. But if you're a woman, unless you have a husband who wants to be a stay-at-home dad, but which is very unusual, I think, and... it's a predicament that you have that doesn't seem to have a very easy answer to it. I've never come across an answer that works other than you need to throw yourself out to the absolute vulnerability of having a partner who supports you, mm-hmm. 100%, right? And now that's a whole different story because that is a very loaded, it's very complicated. Because of we have a, you know, the feminist movement, which tells women a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of what they're told is fine, but very difficult to implement in real life, which is the kind of have it all, you know, I can live, I can have this and this. Mm-hmm. So my solution is, like, for example, my solution would always be, you need a good, stable relationship with a husband that supports a wife during the time when she's pregnant and has a baby until she wants to, till they're old enough to sort of, you know, get free up her time. Now, that's probably a pretty old-fashioned mm-hmm. idea. What do you think about that? I mean, it's like...
There is a saying here in the U.S. that I've heard from my friends that is, when a woman gets pregnant, she gets fired. When a guy gets his wife pregnant, he gets a raise.
Yes.
So, because... And I
but that might be the market speaking.
I know. You know? But that's the thing, like... But the market also, like, is adjusting to our current time. It's just because we think that everybody is replaceable, but actually it isn't. Women in the workplace, and of course it depends on the job. It depends on the job. Women in the workplace doing great jobs, the employer knows, like, I don't know how much you employ people, team, but, like, I work with, like, my team, we're always getting bigger. But when you find somebody that's good, you don't want to let that person go. You don't really. So we are right now, we have one of our girls is pregnant. And then we are going to pay her the paid parent leaving, not because we were told to, but because we want her to come back. And we're here to empower women, right? We are in the movement of empowering women. We do believe that this is the movement. And you know what? Because that's why women are waiting so long to have kids. So they have this bargain power, not only with the partner, but always also with their employers. It is important that you have the bargain power. That's why women don't want to have, like, and you as a father, even if we keep this model that you said, would you say to your kid, get married at the age of 18, find the right guy, and then get 3 babies before you're 25, and then later you join the workforce?
I do talk, I mean, my eldest is only 12, but I have thought through this many times. What am I going to say? What I will say to her is I will show her the alternatives. I will say, look, you can do this, but this will be the outcome. Or you can do this, and this will be the outcome. And for example, if you pursue your career until you're 35, say, mm-hmm. or 30, you can do that, right? That's absolutely fine. But... think about the scenario you'll find yourself in when you're 35. Do you want that? Rather than just, I want a career, I want to do this, I want to do... Because it isn't for everyone. I know many people who, at my age, women, who are a bit annoyed that they were hoodwinked into basically joining the workforce when it wasn't something they particularly wanted to do. Now, all right, everyone's different. I know that. But yeah, advising my children, the girls in my family, I will be doing that. I won't be saying you should do this. I'll say, look, there's a few options for you here, but think through them, because we're in a period of change historically. I'm talking about 100 years of change, and no one's quite worked out the best way to do things yet. You can see that around us, because on one hand, feminism is phenomenal, and on the other hand, it's a complete nightmare, isn't it? You get the side of feminism that basically wants everything is completely unsustainable. We know that. But then there's a more thinking person's feminism, which is a bit more realistic and a bit more open, and it's probably on the kind of libertarian right side of the spectrum, I would say. You find a little bit more of a concerted effort of trying to understand what actually the best possible thing you could do for your children is. You know what? One of the problems I've seen, right? Because I've watched this over my life, is when we were young, when I was younger, and my mother and father's generation, when they saw what happened when you had children, you saw it as you sacrificed your life, mm-hmm. right? You did. You at that point, it was totally acceptable to now sacrifice your life for the children, right? What I see now is slightly different. People don't, that's not a naturally occurring thing. And often, and especially, I suppose, with women, because they sacrifice the most in many ways, they see that as a negative, the sacrifice. Whereas the generations before that actually saw that sacrifice as a like a responsibility that gave them a fulfillment, you know. And like I say, I don't think I've got the answer, 100%. But I can see the change, and I can see that there are plenty of women who are absolutely empowered by making sure they're in a situation where they are supported to be a mother for as long as they can, literally for as long as they can. My wife, she's just started a business now, and our children are like 10. And because they aren't around so much, they're now at school a bit, they do all this kind of stuff. But for the first large number of years in those, you know, she wanted to be there. And that's fine. Absolutely fine. That's what I want. I think that's, you know, like from what we know about families, the best way to bring up really solid, nice kids is to have strong mothers and strong fathers in the same family. That's my conclusion.
Yes,
yeah.
It is teamwork, right? It is teamwork. And as you said, nobody knows the perfect design for it. What we like to say in Lola is that you have the choice. If you want to do it at the age of 18 and enjoy the workforce when you are in your late 20s, that's a legit choice. If you don't want to have kids at all, it's a legit choice. If you want to have kids, for instance, Nina is pregnant. She's 42. And this is her fourth baby. She had, she started in her mid 30s. And this is a legit choice as well. And the babies are all healthy, as far as we know, no problems. Medicine is changing in the favor of women in this capacity. So what we don't want is to come with a top-down solution that one fits all, saying, this is your role, is to be a mother and to be a great wife, supportive of your husband, and to be working on this team that sometimes the other partner is not really working the same team. And this is why the feminist movement, in my opinion, was so important, because they would be joining this model, the previous model, in which they would be married at the age of 18 with somebody that would be 3 or 4 years older than them, sacrificing for 5 kids, that at the end, the husband would just leave you, or the husband would have so many other lovers, or the husband wouldn't be a real provider. The money would go to beers, would go to gambling. That, unfortunately, was a model that was imposed. Women wouldn't have access to bank account. They would just be able to have their credit cards if it was under the name of the husband. So we're talking about a lot of regulation coming from the government. They wouldn't be able to divorce. Or if they were able to divorce after it became legal, they would have this social burden of it. So we're talking here about changing society and empowering women to make their own choices. All of these choices are going to have their trade-offs. We know it. And I think that what we're talking here that is different from what you said, the feminist movement that think that they can't have it all. We are facing reality here because we are adults and we like to say that we're not telling them that we're going to give it to them, just like the leftists do. Oh, you got pregnant, you know what? The government's going to help you. No, we're talking reality here in the sense that, well, you need to pay for your mistakes. This is part of life. But we have the merciful thought as well that we're here to support and we believe in civil society. And when we go and like sharing a little bit of, because you shared your personal life, I'm going to share mine. I am 33. I am in a relationship for years as well. I never wanted to be married or pregnant under 30. And I know that 30 is a age that hits a lot of women because before 30, you're too young. And after 30, you're already too old. In women's life, that's like a line that you cross that is so crazy because until 29, you're too young for everything, to be a CEO, to be in a senior position. And then you hit 30 or you're too old, which is insane. You know, but we're here to deal with the trade-offs. We know that it is these are all choices and they all come with their downsides. And this is just life. You need to choose.
Do you plan to have a family?
Yes. Yes. We plan.
And how would that work when you have to give up work? Are you hoping that your employer will support you or your husband will support you or both?
Well, this is a great question because in Lola, of course, in Lola, we have a different culture. And in the US, Honestly, all of my, in this movement that we are, the nonprofit movement, world, field, whatever you want to call it, what I see, at least in the US, is that they do offer paid parent leave to keep you. And my colleagues at Cato, I had colleagues that got pregnant while I was there and they returned to work. They stayed. I remember it was not too long. It was 4 months. So if you think about it, it's not a long time. It's not enough time, right? But for instance, Nina, my boss, she never really stopped working. I mean, and of course we're different because we're not in person, we are remote, and she could do everything at home with the kids. Answering your question, I don't really know. I don't know what I'm going to do, you know, because I also want to have 3 kids. And I'm open to adoption as well. I'm very open to adoption, but I would love to get pregnant. And I talk about it. We talk about it together, my partner and I. And but how it's going to be in the future, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to expect him or the employer. I don't know.
I think the question, well, the lesson I've learned, but it's an anecdotal one. It's just me that's learned this in my family, is that, like I say, an inspirational father and an inspirational mother, if they live together in the same family, the kids grow up great. They grow up absolutely fine. And but it has to, they have to be there. You know, that's the interesting thing. Like, if you as a mother and father don't bring up your children, somebody else will, or mm-hmm. something else will. The government, their school, you know, you have to be there. And that's the interesting thing. And the problem, I suppose, I have with women who go back to work mm-hmm. after they get pregnant is somebody else is bringing their baby up, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But I see one of the responsibilities of life. If you're a libertarian, you understand responsibility, don't mm-hmm. you? You understand bearing the weight of responsibility. And as a result, you are given the biggest responsibility in your life, which is your children. And as a result, that responsibility is to create the best human beings you can. And in my experience from now having 3 of them, you need to be there for that. And you know, all right, I'm in America now. My kids are not. But for the first 10 years or 8 years of their lives, like you say, we have the option to work from home, which is great. Mm-hmm. So I worked from home, but then when I was away for 2 weeks, and then I come back and then I'm there like 3 or 4 or 5 weeks at a time, you know. And it was, I was lucky because I'd never thought it through mm-hmm. compared to someone else who might be going to work every day and coming home and going to work. But I realize now, yeah, you need to be there to take the burden of that responsibility. It's not just about making sure they've got a house, making sure you're paying for their school, making sure, you know, it's about actually mentoring them, you know, and you need to be there for that. And I think this is the problem. This is the real predicament mothers have, because they're either a mentor to their kids or someone else is, and they go back to work. And I'm not a woman, so I don't have to worry about that. But it is a big problem. You know, it is a big problem.
And I like that you used the word vulnerability earlier, that I want to just go back to it, because it is true. It's a moment that you're vulnerable and nothing really guarantees that your partner is going to be your partner. Nothing, nothing. It's betting, pretty much. And so that's why women are taking more time, because they know that the downsides, the reproduction in human life, is all of the odds are with women, right? The guys, they don't have
women.
One job.
No, against women.
Yeah, against women.
No, I agree with that. Yeah. Well, the responsibility at the end of the day does lie with you, 100%.
Yeah, of course. So that's why women are taking longer choosing their partners, and of course, getting themselves ready to the responsibility, at least in the first world, of course, because they know it. They know what they're going to be responsible for. And also because now they can negotiate it better, not only with the employer, but with the partner. So for instance, in the past, as we were talking, you couldn't really negotiate. It was expected from you to just follow one path and to follow what was told you to do. Nowadays, for instance, Nina, because I love her and she inspires me a lot. So she, with her partner that was also doing homework, they would have the time, you know, for each to take care of the kids. And like, he would travel as well for work. So would she. And then sometimes I would take care of the babies as well, you know, in our work trips, because it was part of the what we had agreed. And if you are, as much as you can, negotiate and have something that's going to work for you, because one model doesn't fit all at all. If you can design the model that you want to follow for your personal life, because this is completely personal, I think this is the best. And again, nothing really guarantees that's going to work.
Well, interestingly, it seems that what you're designing is you're redesigning the model of the past, which was extended family. This is something I talk about a lot on this podcast, is my preferred model of family would be similar to where we live. You have a family on a farm and you have all the relatives living close by, mm-hmm. especially the grandparents. The grandparents should live nearby, because that is the real perfect way to bring up a family, because there are responsibilities of the mother and father. When you have grandparents, though, their role traditionally would be to stay, families stayed together, didn't they? And a bit like what you're describing, you know, you might look after, you've got a kind of, it's a bit like a sorority, mm-hmm. helping each other, which is, when you go back far enough in history, that was what happened in society, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Often, especially in tribal society. I've lived with a lot of tribal societies. And you see that. You even, do you know a feminist lady called, she's Italian, American Italian. She's so phenomenal, really interesting. I've forgotten her name, but I'm going to put it in the show notes, right?
Okay.
But she grew up in Italy, and she describes her the way she grew up, which I think a lot of feminists would look at, as they would say, this is the patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
But the way she described it was quite interesting. She said, in the 60 or 70 years ago in Italy, the women lived in the women's world and the men lived in the men's world,
mm-hmm.
right? And the women were the queens of their own world and the men were the kings of their own world. So there was none of the animosity between, you're doing something I can't do, or I'm doing something I can't. And that might be that, and the women had a very strong sorority, and they would, really, the two worlds of men and women didn't come together as much as they do now. And as a result, she said, she's a full-on feminist. God, I wish I could remember her name, because she's so inspirational.
I'm interested.
I'm so bad with names. I will write it in the show notes, and whoever's listening to this, go and look, because she's brilliant. She speaks very quickly. She's kind of quite chaotic in the way she speaks. But the point is, she was describing a female empowering scenario in which men and women lived very traditional lives. And it was a good model to look at, because in the modern age, you might look at that model and say, oh, look, the women are all down at the river washing clothes. Oh, that's so, like, you know, that's so degrading or whatever. But actually, she said they loved it. This was the women coming together. Just, this was a social, you know, and at half the time they didn't want to do what the men did. They didn't want those jobs. They didn't want the hassle of doing this, that, and the other. They were quite happy to run the home like a business, which is kind of like what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You see that? I see that with my wife. She runs the home in this exactly the same way an entrepreneur would run a business. She has budgets, mm-hmm. she has times to keep, she has to make sure everyone gets to where, you know, and there's, you know, that's what it is. It's
it
just
is a business.
It is a business, mm-hmm. yeah. Sorry, I've forgotten where I'm going with this, but the model you were describing then, you have this kind of group of women and then you help each other. It is very similar to, mm-hmm. to the way that we've evolved over many years. And I would say, because, you know, it's something I think about quite a lot, that a lot of this, the bureaucracy and the systems that we have enshrined in sort of our daily lives, like marriage, for example, mm-hmm. you said you can never trust that the guy's always going to be there, which is true. But that's why institutions like marriage were invented, I think, traditionally. I think they were an insurance policy against those kind of things. And same with the culture, that mm-hmm. a lot of people look to the past and think this is terrible culture. I don't necessarily, because I see a lot of that culture was invented to basically try and redress the situation you're talking about, the inequality of, well, when you have a baby, you're most vulnerable. 100%. So why doesn't society create a system in which at that point you have some kind of mechanism which protects you from the things that could happen to you at that point? And, you know, I'm not saying that I've got the right or wrong answer, but I do not look back at the past with the animosity that a lot of people do, especially feminists, of course. But, and it's interesting to hear what you're saying, because it is... You are looking, it seems like what you're looking for is that kind of system that that nurtures you, that protects you, mm-hmm. that gives you support, which is basically the, you know, like what I think the right way. And you may be reinventing it.
Mm-hmm. No, and totally, I do want a traditional family, if that's what we're talking about. I do want a traditional family, but going also interacting with what you're saying, like, in the past, the tribes were going to be like that and this and that. Like, even talking about trans people, like, everybody wants... The normal thing in humanity, we're going to be straight, we're going to be cis, as they say, we're not going to be trans. Women and men, we want to have one couple and go, because this is much more our sense. The problem is when we have one person that doesn't want to do it that way and doesn't have the choice, and then we want to impose it on people. For instance, you were talking about, I do agree that women don't want to go to war. I do agree, and I see it like that. I don't think women like and would love to go to war. But I do see a problem if they are prevented from doing it. Because if, and the same goes to guys. Why is it embarrassing if the man wants to do the homework, wants to be the stay-at-home parent?
That's a very deep question, but it is embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. Yeah, it no, shouldn't.
No, I think it should.
You think it should, but it's how many are going to be? How many are going to be?
The thing about that scenario is, and if you're a man, I think you might understand, but one of, you know, you like you were saying, I'll never understand what it feels like to be pregnant, for mm-hmm. example. I'll never understand the vulnerability I'd feel. You may not understand what a man feels when
he cannot
be the provider. And I think we're hardwired. I'm one of those people that thinks there are these inalienable characteristics of men and women, which are impossible to just get rid of just like that. And one of those things is men, you know, part of the way we exist is we jostle amongst each other to create, to get as near to the top of the hierarchy as we can. That's what we're doing. And part of the reason we're doing that is we want to be the best offering to a woman, basically. This is how it works. Like, I think a lot of people don't understand this about men. I think men make them better themselves and then present themselves, and then women choose. That's been my experience my whole life. And I think a lot of people think it's not like that, but that's been my experience. So as a result, it's very important for a man to be able to show his worth. Like, it's a strange concept, but I think women have inherent worth. Because you can create babies, you have inherent worth. Men don't, actually. We have, our worth is generated by what we do. Like, if you're a man and you're a deadbeat and you don't do anything, you're pretty worthless. But a woman in that situation is still worth something. There's going to be men that want to court that woman.
Yeah.
But there's not going to be any women that want to court that deadbeat guy. So your worth is inherent. And I'm absolutely fine with this. This is just life. But it does mean that men need to prove themselves. And that means provide. One of the big characteristics of a man is provide. And it's to provide for that vulnerable time that you're talking about. That's the big deal. Because it's on your mind. Yeah. I can tell. It's on every woman's mind. This time comes when I need to be safe. I need to be cared for. I need to be looked after. And unfortunately, like you say, a lot of women look to the government at this point, mm-hmm. which is a terrible idea. But that's possibly just... for whatever reason it happens, you know, and hopefully it won't. Going back to what you said, I think, yeah, being embarrassed about not being the breadwinner is absolutely natural, absolutely normal. I think it's a function of being a man, and you should combat that. Unless you're the, you know, I'm not saying your wife can look after you. That's absolutely fine. But you're in a minority, I would say. And I think if you think that might ever become a majority, like if you're the kind of person that think you might get 50-50 men and women, that I would say that's very unlikely to happen. I think it will always remain a very small percentage. But anyway, that's a whole other thing.
No, I mean, as I said, when I started this, going back to what you said earlier, because I do believe that most men are going to see it like that. And I think most women are going to see it like this as well. When we talk about the military, that is a huge debate, right? Oh, we're going to allow women or not. Of course, we're past this debate. We do allow women. I don't think women want to be there as much. But if there is one that wants, I think they should be allowed. And also because we are libertarians, so we do see the value of the individual and their differences. Every individual is unique. We are unique. I do agree, though, with the what you naturally are born with. I do believe like women have different instincts than men. And of course, because we get pregnant. This is basic. And I do agree with it. This is biological, of course, and evolutionary. However, if there is one individual that sees, I remember that I watched a show. I was trying to remember the name of the show right now as well. You know, during the 10th. During the 2010, something, I don't remember which year it was, but during that time, I remember that the shows were pretty much about how much women are going to be in this position, taking what would be the men's position, and men are going to be taking what is the woman's position. And I do remember how shocking it was. And of course, I was still living in Brazil, so this switch hasn't really happened because, you know, it's the third world, so the man really needs to be the provider. Nobody's going to be watching your kids if the woman is also working. So I remember that the guy, he was a investigator, private investigator, and he was the one at home. And then the woman was the astronaut. And then I remember his friends that were lawyers would go to his house and they would be like, why is she with you? You're a loser. You're taking care of the babies. And then he answered like, oh, she thinks it's sexy that I'm here taking care of the baby while she's in space. And then, in the show, he was very smart. You know, they met in college or something. And I want to remember the name of the show now, so I can also put, if I don't, I would tell you, because this episode was very iconic, because the guy was smart. He was with the troller, pushing the baby and telling the lawyer, yes, you need to do this and that. So he was kind of smart, but he stayed at home with the kids. I know it's going to be 1 in 10,000. Or if it's 2 in 10,000, I don't think it's a problem. But you know something that's also very feminine that men do in the first world that I think it's great? Because it is more expensive to have a cleaning lady or somebody to do your laundry. Men do it for themselves. Of course, it depends on the structure that you have in your family. But in Brazil, it is not like this. It's the woman that's going to do for the entire household. And it doesn't really matter because we didn't get into that point that we know that we need to divide more because we don't have the cleaning lady, because we don't have this and that. Was it clear what I said, Tim?
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. I still, the problem I have is that I think we're working this stuff out. And I will always look at the past and see a very long tradition, very long, thousands and thousands of years, a very long tradition of something quite similar happening. And that's not to say that that similar thing that was happening was the correct way, but that it happened for a reason. And I don't believe in the patriarchy because I'm a man. Like, I can see what the patriarchy should be. And there isn't a patriarchy, because if there was, then the world would look very different. Like if men were literally, you know, and what a lot of people don't understand about, I think, the patriarchy is, from what I can see at least, because I live a portion, I'm a patriarch. Mm-hmm. I'm a patriarch. I'm absolutely happy to be a patriarch, but it comes from a place of protection. It doesn't come from a place of oppression, not in the slightest. And I'm sure there are oppressive men, for sure. But generally, men are protective. That's my experience of men. Certainly in the US and America, in the UK, whatever. And that's really important. And I can see that that is being misunderstood by a lot of people. especially not so much libertarians, maybe, I think, but certainly there is a culture that's quite strong, which completely misunderstands what a patriarch is, in the same way that what a matriarch is, you know, like, I'm going to refer back to that lady again. Hold on a second. I'm just going to look her up on my phone.
Okay.
I can probably Google something and it will show me who it is, but, let me.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
No, I really want to know. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do this while we're talking. How long have we been going? Oh, we've been going over an hour. This is an interesting conversation, though.
Thank
I think
you.
I like the I like talking about stuff like this because I think there are a lot of misunderstandings about all of this stuff, and I'm really interested to hear your opinion on it because you are a level-headed feminist, I would say, which is talking to anyone who's level-headed is a joy. But talking to anyone who's not, it doesn't matter what they're into, it becomes a bit tiresome. So I want to pursue it a bit further. You know what I mean?
Like, yes, okay.
Let's try and find out as much as we can in the meantime. But why don't you start with what are the at Lola? What are the other big issues that you're sort of like focused on with regards to women?
Well, we are very anti. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
We are anti-government. So and we do not patronize women in the way that we don't cuddle women. That's what I mean. We're not there to cuddle them and say, oh my gosh. As I said earlier, if you commit mistakes, you need to own it and live the consequences of it. But we want women to be entitled to their mistakes and we don't want them to be prevented from it. So we're anti-government. So we don't want the government to get involved in any of our choices, whether it's going to be drugs, it's going to be immigration, going to another country, or abortion. I don't know if you were waiting for this one because we...
No, I'm not. But it's a great subject to talk about, though. Mm-hmm. Come on, then. What's your opinion on abortion?
We have girls that go through all of the spectrum. In the spectrum, we have people that are going to be very pro-life and very pro-choice, and they are very welcome. However, we do not ask the government to fix that issue. Just like the other ones, we don't want the government to interfere. Because... just like we were talking earlier, we don't think it's natural that a woman's going to go to the military. We don't really believe it's natural that a woman's going to get an abortion because for the sake it's their plan C or because they don't want to get... they're not going to use it as birth control. We do not believe on it. We don't believe that a woman wants to use abortion as birth control because it's not intuitive. I don't think this is a procedure that you need to go through. So, but however, there are situations that it is legit to have an abortion, even if you believe that's a life, and even if you're very against it. Cases that you are at risk, that your life is at risk. This is a very legit. And putting regulation over it is just going to make it more traumatic, more difficult. It's going to make the process longer. It's going to be longer. So if you really think there's a life developing there, the earliest you do it, the better, right? Because even there is this debate about when life really begins. So this is a very sensitive topic amongst our girls because we are much more right-leaning, if you will. We don't like to use that term because this is not how we see ourselves. We see ourselves as libertarians. So there are topics that we're going to be placed in the left and topics that we're going to be placed in the right. For instance, guns, right? Just because we talked about abortion, we also talk about guns. We're completely in favor of guns. And that puts us on the right because we believe that guns are the only equalizer between... We know that women are weaker when it comes to biology and physical structure. Looking only to you and I here, we know that you would be... you would over it would be stronger than me That's what I mean. So in the abortion topic, it's the same. We don't say that abortions are amazing. And we don't say that, oh, you should experience an abortion at least once in your time life, in your lifetime. You know, but we don't think the government's going to be the one fixing it. Even if you want to advocate for women to put the baby to adoption, it should be a private conversation. Hmm. So,
interestingly, what you said about guns, I wholeheartedly agree. They are this great equalizer in force. What's interesting if you follow that timeline forwards, you can see many of the reasons why men and women are confused at the moment. Because going back to what I was saying earlier, one of our roles as a man previously was as a protector. Before the idea that a woman might be in possession of a weapon that was as powerful as a man's possession. So in one sense, we're losing that. And technology will go further and further and further. I would imagine even in your lifetime, you'll be able to afford a humanoid robot to protect you.
Right.
But think about that. What function does a man play then or forever at that point, right? Now, take the man. One of the functions of a man and a woman is in sexual relationships, right? Another thing you see, technology basically annihilating the woman in the man's eyes. It starts with freely available porn. You know, just in the same way that you'll have this robot that can protect you and you can be a completely independent woman, there'll be the most perfect girlfriend robot that never does anything bad, that loves you.
Doesn't complain.
Beautiful.
Doesn't
yell. Yeah. That will exist too. Yeah, I know. But I think about these things because I follow these things into the future. We're going to have a lot of existential problems. We already do. And we're discussing them now. What is a woman's role? What is a man's role? What should we do? You know, it's going to get a lot worse because there will be something to replace every aspect of the opposite sex for a man and for a woman. And at that point, we have to ask ourselves, well, what do we want here? Like, what do we want here? It's going to be, I don't know what we're going to say. I think there's a part of me that says I'll always err on the side of nature rather than, you know, so in my case, I would rather, in the same way that I would rather live free and suffer the consequences of danger than live safely in a cage, right? I would rather live with the problems I have with my wife than have, you know, like this thing which, you know, satisfies every need I could ever want but isn't actually a real life thing, you know, like, but I mean, this is what guns are. This is a technology that's giving women power to compete with men. But there's also lots of other ones coming in the future that are going to be really interesting to see what happens. Because I know a lot of men have already checked out, haven't they? Just, you know, and we're at the point of just even virtual reality isn't really a big thing yet. It will be, though. And then when it turns into robotics, there's going to be a lot of guys who just say, do you know what? I'm going to opt for that. Because it's perfect. Mm-hmm. I don't have any of the problems.
I don't know how much you like psychology, Tim.
A lot.
You do. So there is a book that I will recommend here. I didn't read the book. It's just because I listened to a podcast about psychology. And the psychologist that runs the show, she recommended it. And she kind of briefed it a little bit. The name of the book is How Not to Raise an Asshole.
Oh, okay, right.
And there is a lot in the human mystery and misery that we don't understand. But one of them is like that happiness doesn't come from you having everything you want. And this is why we and facing your mistakes and your traumas and everything. And one of the things that she says, I think it's a woman, the author, that she says in the book, but the psychologist is also a woman, so. Which is just a coincidence, okay? It's not. It was not by choice. That she says, that is, having everything that you want is not the key to happiness. It is much more about how you hassle with discipline towards something, a goal that you have. That's why eating a cake and like making your child wants a cake, and then if he eats the cake right now, he's going to feel happy right now, but in 10 minutes, he's not going to be happy anymore because it's just a cake. It is just like sex. It's the same thing. And like these guys looking for these AI women, okay, they can feel happy in 10 minutes or less and like feel like they do have a girlfriend for, but nothing fulfill your sadness or when you don't have somebody to share, when you're happy. Your victories, not having somebody to share when you're super sad or when you're super happy, it really brings the misery of humanity to your eyes, you know? So I really like psychology a lot. I don't have any expertise on it, just as a hobby. And as I've learned, you don't need to be good at your hobby. So I just I just follow it. And I love this podcast. And I do recommend this book. I remember that she says other things that I don't remember right now. But this one was very emblematic to me.
Yes, I do agree with that. And I've thought of the person, the feminist that I found her name. It's Camille Paglia. Have you ever heard of her?
No.
She's phenomenal. You would definitely appreciate her, I'm sure. It's Camille, and it's I think some people say Paglia, but it's Pagliia. She's a very fast talking, down to earth feminist. That's her. Yeah, that's her. Check her out though. She's phenomenal from me anyway, but as a man, I really, listening to her, it makes a lot of sense. Because a lot of feminists don't understand men at all. They don't really understand what goes on inside a man. They see, I think a lot of it's a projection of, you know, themselves. Because the male experience is very specific. And it just reminded me of a dream I had last night. My God, it was bizarre, in fact. I actually changed sex in my dream. And then I thought, why am I a woman? Oh, God, that's so weird. I had that experience. That must have preluded this conversation. Because what happened in my dream was I became a woman, right? And I'd managed to have for whatever reason, I changed sexes. I don't know why. That's what I remember thinking. Why did I do that? And I walked past a man in the street and I didn't get that sense of camaraderie and I missed it. It's weird. And that's telling me something now, is that amongst men there is this brotherhood, just like there's a sisterhood amongst women. And I wouldn't want it any other way. You know, like men, we fight amongst each other for sure. But we also stand shoulder to shoulder on most things. Even after we fought, we are, you know, our duties, the things we should do, you know, our responsibilities, all these things. We all understand them. Mm-hmm. Especially in this kind of environment, in liberty movement, I think, especially because libertarians or people that like liberty like responsibility, in my experience. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Responsibility is deeply rooted in our sex and psychology, you know, like, because your responsibilities and mine completely different. You know, we have responsibilities to care for our young, etc. But there's no way I can produce a baby from my body and then feed it and support it. And, you know, I can't do that. In the same way, there's a lot of things that I can do. But anyway, it's beside the point. I know you were about to say something.
No, but one point about the feminist that you should watch Americana. It's another show which is about the ERI, the Equal Rights EERA, Equal Rights Amendment, that was a movement to change the constitution here. And it was about the conservative women against the progressive women. It's such a good show because it was in the 70s when they started this movement, you know, to having the constitution the same that they have for black people, that you cannot discriminate based on gender and blah, blah, blah. So one thing that they got wrong, and in this show, it's a good show. And then they say, the conservative said, because the ones from the left, they were still single, they never got married. And then at some point, she confused the same lady that was single in her 50s, she hit on the husband of this other lady, and then she didn't know, and then she didn't realize, and then she's like, oh, so there is something that you're missing. Because there is something about our humanity that is, we were made to be social as humans. And then being by yourself, I know that it can be a legit choice. just like you're saying, 1% are going to be the deviants. And then I think it's okay if it's a choice. But saying that you should never pursue it, I think it was one of their mistakes. Because at the end of the day, we want to be happy. And I do think having a partner is a good thing for you. As long as it's communicated what expectations each of you have, you know, in this equation. So I think this is one of the things that they got wrong in the past, that you wouldn't need a man for anything, which was the narrative for so many years, right? You don't really need a man. We do not seek this narrative, for instance, in Lola. Because we are not an anti-man organization. We have lots of men supporters, and then we love when men donate to us, especially, or invite us to podcasts.
You love it when men pay for dinner,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. But,
no, what I was going to say was...
Yeah, go for it.
In your past, just before that, before you said that, you know, you would miss the intimate experience of the relationship between men and women. We were talking about the AI thing. I think that's probably what it will come back to in the end. I think we're going through this journey of discovery now where we're trying to work out what men and women are and what we should expect of men and women. And in the end, I think the thing that will bind us together will be that very deep, real human experience of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, I hope that, I mean, theoretically, AI will be able to recreate that even, you know, like I'm sure I already know of people, not people I know, but of people who've fallen in love with AIs, men, you know, which we're stupid like that, you know, but hopefully the world will get so crazy and so topsy-turvy that we'll have to find some kind of common ground. And in my case, I hope it will be the natural experience of being a human, if we can keep it going, because you know we're heading through the most tumultuous time in the history of humans. You know, this is why, I mean, the internet started it, all this free information. This is why the only reason I even heard about libertarianism was because of the internet. If I'd have lived 100 years ago, I would never heard these ideas, you know. But now you add that free information with which is now giving rise to unbelievable technological advancements, we're going to have a really weird... You'll be alive to see some very strange things, I'm sure. I don't know whether I will be, but you'll have many more questions to answer than I will about what it means to be a human being, I think. But anyway, do you know what? I think probably... Let me ask you one question to finish.
Yeah, because...
Yes. Are you optimistic?
I am.
About what? About how?
No, I am optimistic because also if you see the past, we're just going upwards. I know with a little fall downs, but generally speaking, humanity is just going in the right path. And I believe we have history available and that we can compare what worked and what not, what didn't. So I am optimistic when it comes to humans in general and to women's rights and development.
Great. Well, Isabella, thank you for coming in. That's a great conversation. I love hearing your passion for liberty and feminism. Let's call it what it is. You're a feminist, aren't you?
Yeah.
What kind of feminist are you?
Classic liberal. I like to say it like that. There is a book that I want to recommend as well. It is Reclaiming the Mainstream, which is, oh my gosh, her name now, I don't
remember.
Whatever,
you can Google that. Reclaiming the Mainstream.
Reclaiming the Mainstream. It was recommended to me by a donor of ours that is a man. And she's an American author, unfortunately she passed, that was precisely criticizing all of the bad ideas of the feminism of the 70s and saying how much it wouldn't really work, and talking about how we should trust one another, the sorority, going back to that period of time. And I'm a optimistic person also because of her. I like that book a lot. Unfortunately, I forgot her name, but
don't worry. Anyway, thanks for coming in. Lovely speaking to you. Glad we actually got to sit down in the end. It took a long time, didn't it? But good luck with everything. Thank you.
Thank you.